go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Ben, we've got a topic today that we've talked about this in bits and pieces over the years. I know we have.
I like that you said bits and pieces.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it. But we've covered this topic kind of in a roundabout way, but there's a new development in the world of carbon fiber that I think we need to talk about. And it's not entirely new, but this one product that we're talking about, this very specific product that we're talking about, is all new. So let's just jump right into it and tell the people what we're talking about today.
Yes, we are talking about carbon fiber wheels.
Yeah, but this is where the little caveat comes in here, because there have been carbon fiber wheels around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcycles use them. I know a lot of people are going to say, well, there have been motorcycle wheels. They're like, you know, $3,500 each or something. They're very expensive. But the difference between these are automobile wheels that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and they're single piece carbon fiber wheels.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that, because that is by far the biggest difference between the wheels made by this company, which is called Carbon Revolution,
mm-hmm.
and the wheels that you will see made by other high-end companies. We're not saying that the other types of multiple-piece wheels are bad necessarily. We're just saying that these are great.
Yeah, these are a single piece. They're formed, created that way. As you can imagine, they're pretty expensive. We'll get into the cost and you know, how they're made and everything in just a moment. But by the way, that's a clever name, Carbon Revolution, for a company that's making wheels, by the way.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. It works on a couple of different levels. Now, again, these are the world's first one-piece carbon fiber wheels. And what makes these so, I guess, well, first the single piece thing, but what makes them so valuable, I guess, to somebody who's in motorsports or, you know, a race team, someone has an exotic car maybe, is that these are tremendous weight savings over even equivalent aluminum wheels.
Right, yeah. The wheels made by Carbon Revolution weigh between 15.5 and 18.4 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still up to 15 pounds lighter than aluminum wheels.
Yeah, of the similar, you know, shape, size, design, mm-hmm. et cetera. So you're talking about a weight savings of something like 40 to 50% over the equivalent aluminum wheels for, you know, a racing. And as you know, aluminum wheels can be pretty expensive as well.
Sure.
You know, they also have magnesium wheels that we'll talk about, and titanium wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that all these different exotic materials, but the price goes way, way up when you start getting into these exotic materials. And the weight, as we'll find out, is still, I mean, we just mentioned, I guess, that the weight is still significantly lower for the carbon fiber rims.
Oh, Scott.
Yes.
Before we go on, we should do a real quick, just a recap of what carbon fiber is.
Oh, okay.
For,
yeah.
You know, so everybody knows.
Yeah, sure. Well, of course, it's, you know, just give me 1 second here.
Sure. Oh, I've got something here, too.
Mm-hmm.
So carbon fiber reinforced plastic. It's a super strong, lightweight material. It's becoming the darling of the engineering world, right? Because the given weight of the material is at least 3 times stronger and stiffer than steel, aluminum, or titanium. And what that means is that if you have maybe 1 pound of carbon fiber and 1 pound of steel, aluminum, or titanium, carbon fiber is going to outperform those in terms of durability. So essentially, all it is, it's a huge mass of very thin strands of carbon. And when we say thin, you know, I mean super, super thin.
Really thin, like thinner than a human hair thin.
Exactly, exactly. And so they're bunched together in a carbon fiber tow, and then from this they begin to mold and create pieces. When we talk about carbon fiber on this show, we often talk about pieces of, you know, body work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Body panels.
Yes, big panels, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be even small trim work, you know, that's inside the vehicle or outside the vehicle. A lot of times it's just decorative stuff. I know the panels, you know, serve a purpose. They've got, you know, weight reduction and
mm-hmm.
strength, and, you know, they increase strength and, you know, rigidity of the frame or whatever. But, you know, we should get back to the material itself. I mean,
yeah.
Each of these toes that you mentioned, each toe can have anywhere between 2,000 and 50,000 individual fibers in that bunch. And then the tow material is then, you know, woven or stitched together to create these different fiber or like carbon fiber cloth materials, which is what we're familiar with, really. We see
right.
it, we typically see it or think of it as a cloth. We don't think of it as a strand of fiber, like a fishing line or something like that, right?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And again, each one of those, you know, fishing lines that we're talking about is really just an enormous amount of these fibers bound together already. So, you know, there's fiber laid upon fiber upon you know, more fiber to create a single piece of one fiber, really.
Yeah, like and, one toe, right?
Yeah, toe. That's what I'm trying to think of the word toe. So, and then those are woven into a cloth. And then the cloth, as you know, has that distinctive pattern that we always see, that kind of that checked pattern. And we talked about that in the Rolls Royce episode as well with the red carbon fiber. So you can imagine that, you know, the process is even more difficult to do that. But, and there's a step in between, you know, when they make this cloth. A lot of times they will, you know, the curing resins or the material that binds it all together. And that's what really turns it into the carbon fiber reinforced plastic that you mentioned.
Right, the resin.
Exactly. It doesn't have a hard shape. It's more of it's truly a flexible cloth at that point. So, you know, there's a lot of different curing processes and there's a very complicated way to make carbon fiber. And that's really, that gets to why it's so expensive. I mean.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because riddle me this, if you ran across this too, Scott, did you see on the Carbon Revolution's information page, and their reviews, did you see how long it takes them to make a tire or how many tires they make per day?
I did see how many they make per day. Now, this will shock some people. Do you want to go ahead and hit them with the numbers? Because it's relatively low.
It's like four.
Yeah, they can make, at this time, right now, current technology, they can only make four of these each day. And, that, I mean, for a factory to output that kind of production, you know, four wheels each day, that's not a whole lot right now.
And they do plan to scale this up. Now, we know that is common when you see a startup of any sort. And this company, based in Australia, has been making some big waves. But they've got a history here. This technology did not just come out of the blue.
No, it didn't. In fact, it kind of derived itself from this competition. Now, if anybody's seen the Formula SAE competition, there's a project, you know, like it almost looks like go-karts that they run in the parking lots of large stadiums and places like that, you know, at the mall or wherever. But they hold these big competitions where they have, you know, certain rules that, you know, these vehicles have to adhere to, and, you know, they try to match against other, divisions, teams. You know, like you may have, Ford that comes out with a team and Chrysler comes out with a team and, you know, all these other different engineering companies that will, you know, enter this competition. Well, there was one that was happening at the University of Australia in 2004. And again, yeah, that's a lot of, it's a very academic exercise in that, you know,
sure.
they learn a lot at these competitions. So there's a lot of, college teams there as well. And, now the specific team that we're talking about it was composed of a lot of people, but Ashley Denmead who's now the design director at Carbon Revolution was one of the people on the team in 2004, and after the team decided to make its own carbon fiber wheels, which was pretty innovative at the time, I'm sure. The faculty advisor saw the potential for this whole idea that, you know, that like maybe these could be applied to racing cars, these could be applied to exotic cars, you know, what have you.
Right.
So after grad, and said, you know, this is a good idea, let's do something with this. So after graduation, the entire team came back together to start a company, and that's what turned it into this kind of commercial venture here, you know, this Carbon Revolution. And it took a few years. I think it was like a 7-year, you know, journey, trip that they took here to get this to actually work. But I mean, it is a very successful company as of now. They're already producing wheels that we talked about. It's only four a day, but they are building them and they are making money because it's an expensive product, right?
Yeah, I guess we should go ahead and let the badger out of the barrel, as it were. A comparable set of aluminum tires would cost $8,000, which is pretty amazingly pricey.
That gives you an idea. I mean, and remember we talked about the weight. You're talking about something that could be, you know, 40 to 50% heavier than the carbon fiber tires, right? Or
right,
the wheels,
exactly.
Rather.
Yeah.
So what's the price of the carbon fiber wheels?
Oh, well, it's 15,000 $15,000.
$15,000 for a set of four right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are making them for certain, you know, just some select vehicles in certain select regions.
Right.
So, you know, within Europe, Japan, North America, you can mm-hmm. buy these for, let's see, if you have a Porsche, if you have a BMW M3, mm-hmm. an Audi R8, Lamborghini, you know, the new McLaren, the MP4 12C that we've talked about.
Yeah.
So you get the idea that these are really high-end wheels right now, and they cost quite a bit of money, and they're not, you know, something to be taken very lightly. But I guess maybe on some of these other cars, you know, it's kind of a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you already own a McLaren, I don't know if you're I'm making an assumption here, Scott, but I don't know if you're the kind of driver who's going to freak out over $15,000.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at it as a proportion, like, you know, how much people make, how much they spend on each thing, and $15,000 for these for this set of four wheels, you know, it might not even make somebody flinch. To me, I just can't imagine doing that, of course, but that's the kind of type of vehicle I drive. I don't have any exotic like that, or a race car, because that's the other application. And there's, you know, I do want to get to, man, I've got some stuff. I want to get to the applications, because there's several of them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about why carbon fiber is so expensive, but first I think maybe we should stop for an ad. How about that?
Yeah, let's stop for a brief commercial break.
All right, so we were talking about carbon fiber and, you know, kind of the priciness of these things, you know, that they're fairly expensive right now.
Which means they're mainly used in supercars and race cars.
Correct, yeah. And the reason that it's so expensive, now we've talked about carbon fiber in the past and how difficult it is to make, and, you know, I know we've had little bits and pieces of this. We haven't had a full podcast on carbon fiber yet, but the idea was that they're trying to get the production cost down by making it something they can duplicate over and over again quickly. You know, there's a return factor that they need to make, and mm-hmm. the price of it has to come down to something like, I think the target price is somewhere around $4 or $5 per pound is what they're trying to get to. And I think the last time we talked, it was like $10 or $11 or
right.
even more
yeah.
per pound to create this stuff. And it's a very time consuming process. But, you know, we've seen major panels have been made, you know, for race cars and exotics and, you know, like the new Corvette. And we've talked about, I don't know if the Viper has anything like this, but there's a lot of different cars that have, you know, like a carbon fiber hood, but it takes a long, long time to create that. And it's all hand formed. It's all handmade. Everything is, it's really a labor intensive process.
Also, if we could just interject this part in here, one thing that's tricky, one of the reasons this is so difficult to produce specifically is that if we remember the fiber toes we were talking about and the laying down of the strands of carbon fiber, the problem is that you want these fibers to orient themselves in the direction of the load. So if you're designing these things and if you're building them, then it's already an impossible mission because they're not all going to match up on that load path.
Yeah, that's right. Now, they do a lot of testing. And,
sure.
And I promise I'm going to get back to the expense and, you know, why is it expensive and the applications and all that. But, they do a lot of testing and a lot of the stuff, it looks pretty severe what they do. I mean, they're dropping, you know, great big weights on these things on the edges. And, they do impact testing. They do thermal exposure testing. They do extreme loads. They do high mileage testing and they also do damage tolerance testing. So there's a lot of testing that goes into these things to make sure that they're going to hold up, because I've seen some carbon fiber wheels or wheels that have just disintegrated. I mean, once they get a crack or a flaw in them, they just kind of let go because they become very brittle at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So these things have to be really made stout. And I know that motorcycles are already using these, but you're talking about a considerably heavier weight with an automobile.
Sure.
And there's a lot more force on these things, you know, at these kind of off angle axis. And, you know, it's just something that, you know, if you hit a curb at a certain angle or a pothole or, you know, anything, one of those metal plates that's in the road sometimes to cover, you know, construction.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff, you know, if you hit that and you do something to the wheel that would normally cause a bend in a metal wheel, you know, that would give you kind of a warning, you know, that something's wrong, you know, that would, it would feel off balance or, you know,
yeah.
leak air. There's a chance that, you know, the carbon fiber wheel is just going to almost disintegrate, really. And that's what they're testing to stop that. I mean, that's what the impact testing, the thermal testing and all that prevents, I suppose.
And going back to your earlier point, that testing is part of the cost of the wheel.
Part of it, yeah, yeah. And when we talk about, you know, this expensive nature of this material, there's a great article, and this article will clear up a lot of people's perceptions about, you know, why it's expensive and, you know, what goes into making this stuff, because you tend to think that it's an easier process than it really is. There's an article in Gizmodo.com from, I think her name is Rachel Swabe, who wrote this. And I think it's a couple of years old. So, you know, the information is not right on with the dollar amounts that things cost, because I think at the time this was written, it's right around $10 a pound to create this. And they're trying to get to the $5, $4 for standard production.
Mm-hmm.
But it does tell you just what a pain in the rear this stuff is to create. And I mean, really difficult. It's not something that somebody could do at home. And this is where the weirdness comes in, is that a lot of people think, you know, I could do this at home. I've seen kits that I can buy. And a lot of places will sell you the carbon fiber weave already made out, the cloth.
Yeah.
And they'll sell you the resins, and they'll sell you whatever else you need. And you can create your own carbon fiber panels, parts, whatever you want at home, on a, you know, sort of semi-pro basis. You're not going to be able to vacuum pack them like they would in a major factory or anything like that. But that may give you a little bit of false bravado, I guess, because when you look at what goes into actually making the carbon fiber weave and the cloth and the materials, it's very, very difficult. And actually the manufacturing of the stuff is where the number, you know, the cost of the stuff goes way, just right through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
There's this whole process that it goes through. And I don't even think I need to read much of this article, but I mean, just to give you an idea.
Sure.
It goes through two major processes just as the strands, the base material, that we talked about that go into the toes.
Mm-hmm.
There's an oxidization stabilization, which is a tough word to say.
Yeah.
And, this is where the fibers are continuously fed through 50 to 100 foot long ovens, pumping out heat in the several hundred degrees Celsius range.
Wow.
And it takes hours of that just to do that. Huge, huge energy, massive energy eater for this process. And then there's another process that it has to go through after that called carbonization. And carbonization is a slightly higher temperature, but they're shorter and it doesn't have to take quite as long. But these are around 1,000 degrees Celsius for this step. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to remove the acrylic from the material. Like, they're trying to separate the chemicals that make up that strand,
right,
when it initially comes to the factory. So these strands, just to weave them all together, that, you know, you mentioned they have to be all parallel and stretched evenly.
Well, as close as possible.
Yeah, they have to be exactly straight, pretty much. You know, even if one little fiber is broken off in that thing,
mm-hmm,
which can happen, of course, you know, that this process all has to be completely uniform. If it breaks off, you know, then that whole piece is ruined, because that's a flaw in it, and that flaw is going to, I guess, be the one that gives way eventually. You know, that's
right,
going to be the,
yeah,
the chink in the armor, I guess.
Sort of like the way that, this is a terrible comparison, but similar to the way that a crack in a windshield,
mm-hmm,
can just expand and spider web out over time.
Exactly. That's right. So, you know, there's this, and we're not even talking about like this, you know, like the thermosetting and, you know, all that with the different types of resins. They're talking about now, material swapping. Like, they're saying that they may be able to get some material from wood instead of mm-hmm, petroleum-based products. So they're talking about renewable carbon fiber strands, which is kind of interesting. The materials that they start with.
Yeah, that's a new idea. That was a new idea to me.
And you know, they're also talking about using these thermoplastic resins, which are contrary to what they use right now, which is, I guess, and I don't know how different this is, but they mentioned a thermoset resin earlier in the article. But they say that thermoplastic resins, they're not ready quite yet, but they could mean a 60 to 70% cut in cost. And you know what that'll mean?
Yeah.
That will bring it right to production.
Yeah. I'm thinking if they can cut it down that far, they can still, mm-hmm, they can compete directly with aluminum, and they can still make a bigger profit margin.
And you know what? I just completely glassed over that whole article. You know, there's a lot of really good info in there. It's at Gizmodo.com.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and the title is "Why is Carbon Fiber So Expensive?" And it'll give you a kind of a 50-year history of why this stuff is so costly to create.
Right. We are in the early pioneering days of this phase of material science, and I think it's pretty exciting. Scott, we were remiss. Got a little bit of bad news. We were remiss, and we forgot to list some additional advantages of carbon fiber wheels.
Oh, okay.
One of the advantages, of course, is that they are not metal, so they're not subject to the same processes of degradation which I can't believe we didn't talk about.
Fair enough. We've got some stuff I still want to talk about. We shouldn't shoot ourselves in the foot yet.
We shouldn't shoot
ourselves. No. We've got a lot of info to go still.
Okay. Well, this part then. So corrosion, for example, they're not going to corrode.
Fair enough.
And the second part, fatigue that would happen to a metal part, and that would be like a small repeated stress. You mentioned this earlier.
Yeah.
The carbon fiber wheels are not going to be as vulnerable to that, because what's called their stress cycle is different to an aluminum stress cycle. And because of this difference, designers don't have to do what's called overbuilding. Like if you're working with an aluminum component of some sort, you have to build a bit over in order to make up for the stress cycle that you know is going to happen.
So for a metal rim, you may make it thicker than it needs to be because you're accounting for corrosion and damage of any kind, right?
Exactly.
So these are made to a tighter tolerance, I guess, and knowing that they're not going to degrade or be worn in any kind of way, right?
Yes.
Okay, exactly. Got it. You know what? I've got quite a few of these different things. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I still want to cover here. We've got applications. We've got, you know, why mm-hmm. why they're good for the aftermarket. There's some concerns that people are talking about, which I do want to mention at the end.
Okay.
But you know what? Maybe this would be a good time to take another quick break for an ad. How about that?
That's a great idea. And we're back.
All right. So we were talking about maybe some applications for this thing, right? And,
yeah.
You know, we talked about exotics and race cars, but, you know, there's more to it than that. And these will be covered within this group that I'm going to mention here now. Mm-hmm. There's aftermarket, which is probably the biggest thing right now because they're shipping to people that already have, you know, a Porsche, BMW M3, Audi R8 or whatever. So the aftermarket is big, right? And why would they want to choose a carbon fiber rim versus, let's say, an aluminum rim, you know, besides the weight and, you know, maybe not the cost because, you know, it's twice
huge,
as much, really.
Yeah.
But the couple of reasons that they list on Carbon Revolution's site is that, you know, there's increased acceleration. There's also reduced stopping distance, improved steering, handling and response, improved mechanical grip, reduced road noise, and reduced fuel consumption. Now, fuel consumption is a big one because, you know, a lot of people, they either do it for, I guess it's not just, you know, for lower weight, you know, like in mm-hmm. most race applications, but some people actually use this stuff for fuel economy, like for better fuel economy.
Right.
Manufacturers,
yeah.
I should say, you know, they lower the weight, you know, if you can replace that hood with a carbon fiber hood and it's going to improve your fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
Also improve performance. I understand that that's the trade-off, right?
Yeah, well, let me just point out here, when we say improve fuel economy, we're not talking about a huge number.
No,
it's
no.
6%.
It's
less than 6%.
Oh, no, I would think, okay, you're saying 6. You probably have numbers that are close to that, but I'm going to guess it's more like 2 or 3% at best.
It is 2 or 3%.
At best.
Being kind.
Okay, gotcha. I understand. That's fine. But, you know, and that's if you have a roof and a hood and other components that are carbon
right.
fiber as
but,
well.
But granted, it does make a difference over the life cycle of the car.
It absolutely does. And that's exactly why race teams use it, is because it's durable. It improves fuel economy, which is important during racing as well. You know, because, you know, fewer pit stops, you know, you get farther on a drop of fuel, which is less weight all around that you have to carry. You know, it just has these mm-hmm. these gains that kind of snowball, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good way to
all
say
right,
it.
All right, so for the aftermarket world, it's more about appearance and being able to say you have a carbon fiber hood, I guess, than do you really care if you're getting 2% better fuel economy in your Audi R8?
Well, watch out, Scott.
I doubt it.
Someone does, though. I'm sure there's like one guy.
Okay, probably somebody does. But, you know, this aftermarket application, you know, there's a lot of good reasons to use these rims, so I understand, these wheels, so I understand. So aftermarket is number one on the list, I guess, for mm-hmm. applications. There's also OEM applications, which is original equipment manufacturers. So, you know, like, let's say that a manufacturer is actually putting these on cars right from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're building X number of vehicles with these, and it doesn't have to be performance vehicles. It could be any vehicles they want. Let's say they put it on the next generation of hybrids. They put it on electric cars.
Right.
I could see great applications for that. I mean, if a Tesla Roadster or a Tesla Model S has to put mm-hmm. or can put carbon fiber rims on the car and experience, they may even gain more, I guess, equivalent MPGs than they would, you know, with aluminum or some other lightweight.
That's a very interesting point there, because it's something that they talk about as well with the OEM equivalents. They wrote this in a very clever way, Scott. I'm just going to run through this real quick. They said bolting on a set of Carbon Revolution's carbon fiber wheels is equivalent to, and I'm sure you saw this, adding horsepower to the engine, increasing the size of the brakes, fitting stickier tires, upgrading suspension, adding more sound insulation, and fuel savings. What's clever about the way that's written is that they say it's like having bigger brakes. It's very glass half full.
I understand. Yeah, I get it. I mean,
but those are all valid points. Like I looked into what they're saying, and it is true. Some of the advantages are more significant than others.
Well, when they say it's like having bigger brakes, they mean that there's reduced stopping distance.
Exactly.
When they say that it's like adding horsepower, it means that the acceleration can be a little faster because there's less weight to push or pull or whatever. So, yeah, I can understand how they're writing this. I mean, it's like, oh, and it also works this way. And it's like it's a list of the same things, just worded a little bit different, right? Okay, so I get that. And we talked about motorsports as well.
Sure.
And I don't know how much more we have to go into that, but of course, there's mainly performance benefits in that arena, I guess, but they're also more efficient and, you know, of course, lighter race cars, less fuel. We talked about that too.
Yep.
So that's important. Another one that, you know, is a really good application, I think, is aerospace. It's not only lightweight and really, really strong, but a lot of aerospace tech engineers have been saying, you know, like, let's replace panels with this. And I think there's an article here somewhere that I've got, and I cannot find it, but I think they're replacing some panels, exterior panels, on the Airbus A380, I think was the number. Don't quote me on that one for sure, but I think it's the A380 that they're replacing some panels with carbon fiber for, you know, additional weight savings over aluminum. So there's not only that, but I think they're talking about these rims, you know, that they can put them on airplanes. And of course, can you imagine how much an airplane rim weighs? Even if it's aluminum, it's going to be 40 to 50% heavier than the carbon fiber equivalent.
You've piqued my interest because this was a question I was going to ask you at the end. I still have a couple of questions, but this is one I want to ask you right now. What do you think about carbon fiber space shuttles? Like, what do you, I think that is, if it's possible, I think that's the next huge step.
Could be. Yeah. I think they would still have to have those heat shields, right? The plates or what do you call those?
The tiles.
The tiles. That's
the ceramic tiles.
Yeah,
well,
correct.
Yeah. I think you are probably right for now, but what if there was because when we talk carbon fiber, it's all about getting the fiber strands to somehow obey, like herding those cats together.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all about the type of resin, which is closely guarded
You're
at different times.
Absolutely right. So it depends on the type of technology that they use to bind all that together, right?
Yeah. So we just need like a ceramic tile resin and then boom, we have solved space exploration.
Not a bad idea, Ben.
Well, so do you think it's viable?
I don't see why not. I don't see why not. I mean, there's advancements made in that all the time, but I just wonder how they would, how would they bind those pieces of cloth together to make a shuttle that wouldn't burn up on reentry?
And how expensive would it be to figure all that out?
Ah, that's the big one. That's, the development time, the lead up time, and then who's going to be the first one to try that?
I'll do it.
Okay. Fair enough.
So
we're talking aerospace and, that's a fantastic idea, by the way.
We should also talk military tank applications.
Correct. And they're talking about not only, you know, developing these all new technologies, you know, for aerospace and military, but, retrofitting what's already out there so that, you know, you're saving weight. You know, you've got these giant engines and these things, and maybe they can, just become that much more efficient if they can reduce the weight in other ways. Who would think to reduce weight on the wheels? I mean, that's kind of a standard. Like, you know, here's our landing gear. It just weighs this much and that's it. It just does.
Yeah.
End of story. Right. So, if they can reduce weight that way, and I'm talking about a lot of weight, even more efficiency for them, you know, and that goes for cargo carriers, passenger jets, military jets, whatever.
But there's,
one more.
Okay.
If you have something to say about aerospace, get it out now because I'm moving on.
Oh, no, no.
No, no, okay.
I've said my piece.
All right. Industrial is the last one. So we're talking like heavy trucks, semis, tractor trailers. This is a fantastic idea because weight savings times 18 or even more than that. I mean, you've seen these giant trucks with 30 wheels on them, right?
Yes.
So you can imagine the savings in the, I'm guessing that a lot of those are steel wheels right now. Mm-hmm. And those are really, really heavy. I mean, we're talking a tremendous savings, way more than 40 to 50%.
Yeah, locomotives would be a similar thing.
That's not a bad idea.
Because we actually went and hung out in a train yard recently.
Yeah, we did. And, man, those things are big, aren't they?
Yeah, those are huge.
You don't have much of an appreciation for just how big a locomotive is until you're standing on or next to or, you know, climbing around one. And we, I don't know, we had a good day that day.
Yeah,
That was a really fun day.
That was a great day. We hate to be vague, but we will have more information about that by the time this comes out. Check on our Facebook. And then, also, the way we need to end this is that although carbon fiber is clearly exciting and is clearly going to be, a material that we'll only hear more about in the future, it is not without concern. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, there's a few things that people will initially jump to and say that, you know, like we mentioned that, you know, it's really only strong in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's this other direction that if it's struck in just the right way or the wrong way, I guess, but it becomes really brittle, like almost like glass if it's impacted at this wrong angle. So what do you do about that? Well, you know, I don't have answers to these, by the way. These are just concerns that people have brought up. The other thing is that, you know, we mentioned this already. They don't bend first. So it's not like a metal rim where, you know, if you hit a pothole and, you know, suddenly you can feel the steering's off.
Yeah,
a little
no
bit.
Warning dents.
No, nothing like that. It's suddenly just kind of gone. I mean, you can see some motorcycle wheels that have disintegrated. I'm thinking that, you know, these single piece designs are a little better than that, I would hope. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the testing. I know that they go through rigorous ISO testing and, you know, that they're, you know, approved as far as what manufacturers approve, and you know, so current wheels and whatever they're required to have to be on the road right now, I know that, you know, that they're meeting those standards or exceeding those standards, so, and there really shouldn't be much of a worry there. It's just the material itself is so it's new, it's kind of, you don't exactly know how it's going to behave in every situation. I know they do. We don't out here. I mean, we can't be assured of that, right?
Right. There is one thing that I don't know too much about yet, and I'm hoping to learn more about this soon. Remember, carbon nanotubes have generated some criticism because people are concerned that they might be carcinogenic.
Hmm, okay.
I don't know if that applies at all to carbon fiber. I
wouldn't
think so.
These are sealed in. These are completely sealed in.
That's what I was thinking.
The resin, yeah. I mean, it's a glossy material that you're looking at. I mean, it's not like it's a raw material that you know, the powder comes off in your fingers or anything.
Right, it's not getting to the atmosphere.
You're not inhaling that material. I think that the danger would be at the factory, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that they create it, and that's another part of the manufacturing process. You know, these massive machines that they have to be environmentally sound as well. Because of, you know, the acrylics that come off of them and all kinds of different really nasty chemicals.
And those would be the health precautions that people have to take in any manufacturing plants, right?
Exactly right. Yeah, it's nothing unusual for this. I mean, they've got to figure out what they need for their specific processes. So, and a couple more concerns,
yeah,
just real quick, is that, you know, a lot of comments that I've seen about these wheels are suggesting that maybe forged magnesium is maybe a better way to go for strength and lightness. But again, it's just what you're willing to risk, I guess, because, you know, here's the newest technology. Are you going to go for it, or are you going to stick with, you know, these forged magnesium wheels, which are light, really lightweight, really strong, but they're kind of tough to come by. They're pretty exotic as of right now. I mean, and they always have been. And the last thing maybe, and this is kind of an odd one, I've seen it mentioned that carbon fiber is a poor heat conductor. So, you know, like if you've got really, really hot brakes, let's say that you're in a racing application or you're driving an exotic and they heat up quickly.
Yeah.
The brakes wouldn't dissipate the heat as fast as they normally would with a comparable aluminum wheel, because that heat transfers itself to the aluminum wheel, which is then cooled by the air, you know, as it moves through the air.
Huh.
So the carbon fiber wheels won't do that the same way. The brakes will remain hot longer. And I'm sure that's something that has to be thought about if they're going to engineer vehicles with carbon fiber wheels. So that applies to all cars. I mean, when we're talking about, let's say that it's even somebody driving through the mountains in, you know, the family caravan or whatever. You know, there are all the signs that tell you not to use your brakes. You should downshift instead. And, you know, but if you do get your brakes too hot, are they going to stay hotter longer and create a dangerous situation with a carbon fiber wheel versus a metal wheel?
You know, I completely didn't think about that. Mm-hmm. I'm horrified at my negligence.
All that stuff's connected, so you just have to think about where the heat goes.
And as always, we've got those concerns. Those are reasonable. And that last one's very interesting. But you know us, Scott, we don't ever end on a low note. We like to end on a high note. And last time we described the company's wheel output for what they call their CR9 model, we said that the company can make about 4 wheels per day. But in about a year, they're thinking they're going to up that number to 100 wheels per day.
That's a significant increase in production. That's going to be really big for them.
Yeah, I hope they make it. And I was hoping that we could also end on a quotation from Carbon Revolution themselves. There are definitely other players out there, Ashley Demme, the design director, says. They are not as advanced as us, but I have no doubt that once we pave the way, they will be fast followers. They might be following on cargo wheels.
Interesting. Yeah, they just might be.
So this is going to wrap up our episode on the future of carbon fiber wheels. We hope that you guys enjoy them. And as always, of course, if you are lucky enough to own a pair, or own a set, rather.
A full set.
Yeah.
Or one.
There might be somebody who said, well, how much for one?
Possibly, yeah.
That would be me. Then let us know. Drop us a line on Facebook. You can also give us topic suggestions on Twitter. And you can drop us a line directly at our email address.
And that's carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.